Well, good day everybody, and welcome to this first episode of a brand new podcast, Let's Talk Transformative Assessment. My name is Alzette Leroux, and with me as host of this podcast is Dr. Hanlie Adendorf. Hello, Hanlie.
Hello, Alzette.
How are you doing today?
I'm well and excited.
Fantastic. So we have our guest in the studio today, but I think before we jump in inviting our guest to this podcast, maybe, Hanlie, since it's our first episode of this brand new podcast, maybe we can share some context with our listeners. And so just share, where did this idea originate to have a podcast?
Yeah, so maybe just quickly, the background to it is we are currently re-looking assessment cultures and assessment practices, and we're constantly doing that, I guess, not only at our institution, but internationally. And as part of that process, we had the task of creating resources for academics. And the idea then sort of formed out of that, how about we use what is current at the moment and start a podcast series? And I think one specifically where we can share with academics from academics what they are doing, what they are thinking, what they're experiencing.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's basically bringing in the voice of our lecturers and sharing what's happening in the classes, what's happening in the classroom, specifically pertaining to assessments. And then maybe to add on to that, also the whole notion of transformative assessment, and we'll get to that during the episodes that we have, and basically unpacking that. What does that mean? And when we say transformative assessments, right?
Yes, indeed. I think rather than trying to go into the theory and explanation of it now, let's see how it unfolds through discussions with various people.
Fantastic. So for this first episode, we welcome in our studio and in our midst, Professor Karen Jacobs. Karen is at the Department of Microbiology. And Karen, I'm going to hand over to you to explain what are you lecturing. It's a very difficult name for me to pronounce. So yeah.
Thank you, Ilzat and Hanlie, for the invitation. It's something that I really enjoy doing is teaching. I'm teaching the final year course module in the Department of Microbiology, and that's in the field of microbial ecology. So that's basically what I do.
What is microbial ecology, Karen?
That's a good question. I should put that in my assessments. Microbial ecology is just a study of the role that microorganisms play in the wider environment, so how they contribute to different nutrient cycles, biogeochemical cycles, the different associations that they form in nature, how they interact and cohabitate the same world that we do. So that is in a nutshell.
Oh, wow. That in itself is interesting. And like you said, maybe you should assess that. What is that? And linking to assessment, how can you share with us, how do you view assessment? What does assessment mean for you as a lecturer?
So my journey in terms of assessments has been quite a long while. So it's about 16 years now. And when I started out as a lecturer, I also thought, we should write tests and exams, and that's how you test whether people know things. And I think I was very quickly, within the first 2 years, I realized that maybe that's not optimal. So at this point of my life, I'm not a really big fan of tests and exams, but I feel there's so many other options to evaluate and to determine whether somebody has reached their goalpost or the outcomes of a course, that one really doesn't need to do the classic test exam model. So I spend a lot of time reflecting on how I assess students, why I assess a student, and what do I want to see when I assess them. And for the module I'm currently teaching, I've changed my vision, and I think that is to me, that was the most important part, was to change how I see assessments and not just follow a path. And the way I see assessments, and I also tell my students that on the very first day, is that in my course, an assessment is not a test for me to see what you don't know. It is an opportunity for you as a student to showcase to me what you have done so far, what where your knowledge sits, where your expertise lies. And it's also a marker for you where you can improve on. So my goal is actually to just twist that a little around so it's not a negative experience, but it's a positive goalpost during the course of a semester. And the other thing that I also familiar with is the fact that not everybody learns in the same way and not everybody process information in the same way. And there are strengths and weaknesses, and there's only actually just a small percentage of your class that really likes writing tests. And I was one of those students, I can admit that fully. I loved writing tests and exams because I did well. Because it's something I liked doing. It was competitive and it was, a challenge, but it's not suited to everybody. And so when I designed the module, I very carefully thought about what do I want my students to look like when they leave my course? And then work from that and say, okay, these are the things they need to do. So how am I going to determine whether they've reached those outcomes? And memorizing is nowhere in there. So it immediately goes that we can't really write traditional tests. So what I've done is we've changed with the help of Hanlie. She has been very instrumental in my thought processes. Changed the course into a flexible assessment module with multiple assessments in various formats across the semester. So that If you have a bad day, and this is my biggest concern with writing a traditional test and exams, and one has absolutely we know that you cannot plan a test according to each one's. It has to be on a certain day, otherwise university is just going to be a complete chaos. But what do you do if you are a fairly smart student and you just have a really bad day? Then that 1 3-hour assessment will determine quite a large portion of the outcome of your year or your semester. So I'm trying to avoid that. So if you, and this again, going back to assessment more as a goalpost rather than a definitive marker in your progress. So that if you do not so well today, it's not a train smash. It's not going to cause you to fail your semester. It's not going to bring your mark down, but it will allow you an opportunity to reevaluate and then do better in the next one. So there's a lot of choices that I try and work in to the semester. So a large component of my course is also a practical component. Mm-hmm. And that has a different type of assessment associated to it. So do you want them to be little chefs and learn from a cookbook? Everybody can do that. Really, everybody can do that. Or what do you want? So my outcome, one of my outcomes at the end of the day is to train a scientist. So my approach to this is, how will I train somebody and assess somebody who will be my colleague next year? And if you go in with that mindset, suddenly everything just changes. It moves around. So my approach to this is, I am training my next level of colleagues. So these guys are going to work with you one day. And how well do I want to train them? What do I want them to do? So this is the field of science. In science, it's important for them to know the basic understanding of science principles. But facts change. So and there's so much noise in there that it's rather, for me, much more important for them to understand principles and concepts and be able to judge and pull things together and assimilate and think about things. So that is a different type of assessment. So for practicals, just to give an example, we allow them to do projects. Now, these are not massive research projects, but it has to have certain elements. So there has to be a planning in there. There has to be an execution. How we do group work. So they get assessed on how do you deal with problems, solving a problem in a group? Because that is absolutely how science works. If you cannot work with other people, you struggle. So why not teach them that? And then they have a much better understanding of what group work means.
And do you communicate with the students beforehand?
Yes.
how you think about assessments.
Yes.
You know, sort of give them a view of how you see it as well, so that they can understand this is not just a test or whatever.
Yeah. So this is when they get to our module, it's a bit of a new experience for them as well. So they're not sure what to expect, which makes them a little nervous. And that's where I think it's also important that assessments is one component, but everything is interlinked. So if you want to assess your students to have the best possible way to assess a student's ability to perform a certain job or a task, you need to get to they need to trust you. So that is very, very important to gain their trust very early in the semester, so that when the test comes, we're very transparent in terms of how we assess, what we assess, how they prepare. But we have a whole first lecture just on that. So my other philosophy is that if you want to assess, you have to teach it. So you cannot assess a student on something you haven't taught them to do and then practiced it, and then you assess. You can't just jump in there and surprise them. I don't like surprises. I really don't like surprises. And this is another thing that I just have, is I cannot expect a student to do something that I'm not willing to do. So if I don't like surprises, I'm pretty sure a lot of them don't like surprises. You want to go into an assessment. So if I say you go into an assessment to demonstrate to me what you know and how well you know this, then I need to be very, very clear on how they need to present that, what is required of them so that they can do that. So for instance, I've converted the semester test into two exam opportunities. They can pick any one of the three. So they write all three, that's option for them, and I pick the two best marks. So that eliminates that, oh crap, I didn't have a good day today, my mark doesn't look good, or I didn't understand it very well. In terms of the content of the test, I also don't surprise them. They know exactly, they get the. So we do it in the form of a paper assessment. So they need to read a paper, and then based on the principles we discussed in the class, they need to answer certain questions. It's a research paper. But I don't want to give them the paper and then have them 3 hours to read the paper and analyze it and answer the it's absolutely not possible. I am not expected to do that. When I read a research paper to gain knowledge, I sit down and I carefully read it and I think about it. I try to stimulate similar kind of approach. So we give them three papers that they have 3 weeks to prepare, so they can sit down and they can make notes on those papers and they can bring that in with them. So they can really, really come to the exam or the test or the assessment very well prepared. And then of course, once you sorted your assessments out and how you're going to assess, you also have to think about how do I teach it now? Which is a completely so all of those things needs to be linked. So if you want to do effective assessment, it's got to start at day one. Effective teaching leads to effective assessments, and all of those things needs to line up. So because I want them to think and analyze and be critical about information around them, and I changed my teaching to more discussions. So they get this stuff beforehand, they need to prepare for class, and they come into class and we have 3 or 4 big questions and we debate that and talk about that in the context of the textbook, in the context of the paper that you've read, in the context of... So I allow all of their Wi-Fi and their Googles, and they're welcome to Google and do anything in my class that they like to find that, to access, because that is what a real-life scientist do. We access information constantly. And I think that also it's very difficult in the beginning to get them to participate, but towards, you know, week 3 or 4, participation really, really picks up. And we now have technology to our advantage. So assessments, the field of opportunities and different types of assessments has just like opened up. There's so many ways that you can assess using technologies.
Mm-hmm. And you make me think it's that trust relationship that needs to build over a period of time. And Alzette, I picked up when Karen spoke about you have to teach to how you're going to assess the constructive alignment point. So it's aligning. You started with the outcomes and the importance then of aligning that with what you teach, with what you assess. Maybe a quick question then. You ask them to bring in the exam papers, or you give them an exam paper. What kind of questions do you ask then? Because they've seen this. They had to prepare for it. Yes. What can they expect in the test?
So there's a couple of really important key concepts that they need to understand and be able to identify. So I would, for instance, say... So all of these papers are ecology-based papers. So it's microbes within an environment doing something. So I would, for instance, say, well, read this paper, the one that I didn't randomly pick. And I say, you've now prepared this paper. Could you elaborate on the possible role of these microorganisms in that environment? So you now had enough time to go and look, oh, they talk about this microorganism. That is what the literature says about this thing. I know this environment has got this type of parameters because that is in the paper. So now how do I interpret that? And that's the question. So the question is, the answer is never in the paper. Hardly, I think there's 5% of the test that comes from the paper directly. Or in terms of materials and methods. So the methodology is rapidly, rapidly evolving. So, and it also, in science, it depends on how much money you have. So they can read it and I say, well, in this paper, they have used high throughput sequencing. If you don't have access to a sequencer, how can you generate similar data? So that test, do you have an understanding of why you do the test? What do you measure? What's your unit of measurement? What does it mean?
And also how to contextualize it
and
to a different space where you don't have access to the same.
Yes. And that's really dealing with those key concepts, those threshold concepts, and actually the importance thereof. Because once a student grasps that, then it's almost like that word says, it's a key unlocking potentially further knowledge or building upon further knowledge, right? Yeah. What year group do you teach?
Third years.
Okay.
And how do they respond to this?
Mm. Well, just before the first assessment, A1, there's a lot of nerves. There's hours and hours of questions. I do show them what a typical test look like. But I think some of them actually don't believe me that I'm going to ask one of the three papers in the test. They don't believe me. So they don't prepare beforehand. So they just come in with an empty paper. I feel students that do very well in these kinds of assessments are the ones that actually sit down and prepare. Now, the beauty of this kind of preparation is you can sit down, you can prepare a week or two in advance. You don't have to, you know, study the night before. So especially the assessments all fall in 1-2 weeks over September usually. So if you can prepare ahead of time and you have your notes, you can just dig them out again and go write your test. That also makes your life a lot easier. So by the second one, when you go into A2, usually it goes much better. But it is different and people don't like different. So it takes a little bit of time, but by the time we write the test, they're used to our weirdness and the way we do things.
Then it's almost like, because what I heard you said earlier, from you as a lecturer point, it also asks adaptability from your side in the way that you thought about assessment and think about it. And then also, in a way, modeling to your students that adaptability for them initially not trusting this is too good to be true, you know, almost. And then once they lean into that, they can all also adapt to sort of a new way of assessment and then
I think,
with that.
You know, in a way, I force them to learn. So there's a lot of restrictions on what they can bring in terms of notes. So they can, for instance, they can only make handwritten notes on the papers.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Yes.
And there's a reason why I say that. And that's because...
What's your reason?
My
Share
reason for
us.
That is when you write things down by hand, you remember them more. Much better remember. So if you type them, not so much. If you photocopy it from somewhere, there's no learning there. So
copy-paste.
This is my way of forcing them to learn. And... I think it works because you can see that in the discussions in class. So that's one reason. So, and they can only bring in handwritten notes. So the outcome of their assessment is based on how well they prepare, not on how well they memorize. Yes. And I think once they get the head goes around that, you know, it immediately clicks becomes in. An easier assessment. Yes. It's not easy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me you're really pushing it beyond those lower levels of Bloom's taxonomy.
Yes.
And your experience is the same. You are able to see what they have internalized, what they have mastered on the higher levels. And in terms of, you can respond to that, but then also in terms of your ability, to what extent or not, does that help you to look at who gets accepted into honors?
Yeah. So... That is a very big question. So in terms of the types of assessments, we do a lot of smaller assessments also, and I don't call them assessments. I just call them classwork exercises during the course where there are no marks.
I just wanted to ask, do they count?
There are no
marks
that goes anywhere, but there's a reward.
Yes, okay.
There's no marks, but there are rewards. So we overlay the whole course of the game that we play, which is a whole podcast on its own.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So we've been doing it for a couple of years. It works really well. It's set up now.
Fantastic.
But it's basically, you know, and it speaks to my science students and the whole gamer aspects that sometimes pops up there. It's like a typical World of Warcraft. So each student gets an avatar. And that's the one thing that I've realized, that sometimes people can hide behind an avatar and they're more active in class than they are when they have to be there as a person. So for all kinds of smaller type things, so we have, instead of writing small class tests to help them check whether they're keeping up, we have what we call a boss battle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, I'm the boss.
Yeah.
So they have to battle me.
Who's
so
the boss?
And they work in groups. So, and I think it's if you just put it down there and say, well, we're going to have a quiz today in class and I will just put the names on the board. So there's going to be a question on the board and you have to answer it in front of the whole class. People will be terrified.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now we put them into the clans, which they divide themselves in. And they play as a clan. So it's five students at a time. So they get 60 seconds to figure out an answer, and they have to publicly tell us that. And the rest of the class can criticize it. So it takes us a bit of time every second Friday. But we do that at the end of each chapter so that they know I've mastered this chapter. This is the basic minimum knowledge that I should have. I've mastered it or I haven't mastered it. So sometimes you get a question, sometimes you go. The game randomizes it. So some groups get questions, but as a class, they have to beat me. It's not individual.
Wow.
So they have to work together as a class to beat me, because the class, the test counts out of 15. Yeah. They have to get 13 out of 15 to win. Yeah. So, which means 13 groups out of the 15 groups need to answer correctly. It's a huge amount of fun. We take the stress out of that. But it puts down those very clear markers about this is where we are, this is what you should know now. If you don't know it, now is your responsibility to go back and pick up.
And in a fun way, it also gives that feedback to the students exactly where they are, which is what assessment's all about. Yeah,
yeah. And that last semester is just so terribly stressful. You know, so if you can put a little bit of lightness and fun in there, that helps, absolutely helps. But so there's a lot of soft assessments in there, but those things they don't go on the marks on.
Yes.
So we don't add them to the marks. What we do add is participation.
Mm-hmm.
We have extra, so to cater for those that are a little extra.
Okay.
We have extra work, so we call that side quests. So we have side quests for them. So they can go on these things, which is an additional paper, which is maybe a little bit more difficult, more challenging, and they need to write me a little criticism or a critique on that or a comments on that. And for that, they get bonus marks.
Okay. Yeah, and in that way, you also basically cater for the student who
absolutely
not just wants to pass.
Yeah, so those really are the guys that really want to get into honors, and they push those things and they want feedback. And it's more written things. It's really more towards the higher levels of that Bloom's pyramid. And those are the ones you're going to get into honors class.
Yeah, so in the end, it's not just who got the best mark on an exam or a test or multiple exams or tests.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when they apply for honors, we already have a very good idea about how they think, how they go around using data, information, how well can they express themselves, how well do they function in a lab, because I sit in the lab during the practicals and I watch them. Mm-hmm. We have no demis, we let them sickle subiki. So a large chunk of the philosophy in my class is sickle subiki. Han sickle subiki. Because that is how you learn, is by, you know, figuring things out by yourself, by reading the protocol, not by doing what I tell you to do all the time.
And I think that in itself calls for that trusting environment that you spoke about. So learning is a vulnerable space to be in, right? So, and for me to learn, I need to experiment and make mistakes and almost have that room for making mistakes and learning from that and, you know, performing better from there. And that's also what I hear linking to that trusting environment or the space that you create as a lecturer, basically.
I think it's one of the big things that excited me about what you do, Karen, because it's creating a whole space that is different and that is conducive to learning, which is what transformative assessment, I think, in our conception at least, is about in part. And for non-Afrikaans speaking people listening, on sickle subiki, we struggle a little, which is a conversation I've often had with academics that just want students to struggle a little and get things wrong. But we seem to experience more and more that students, it's not even that they don't want to struggle, they're scared of making a mistake. It's so much summative assessment all the time from school. Every time you put your pen on paper, it counts for marks. So there's that inherent fear of getting it wrong. Well, we want them to struggle a little, to get it wrong, to learn from the mistake.
Well, that's inherently the process of science is eliminating through a lot of mistakes.
Yes.
So 90% of our experiments fail. But every time something fails, you learn something new, which is why we actually allow them to spectacularly fail in practical. And they don't get penalized for failure. They get penalized for not doing something. So they get assessed based on how they did the project, not how much they did for the project or how complex the project is. So you can take a very simple task, a simple idea, and do it really well, and you'll get good marks if you can interpret your results correctly and you really performed well. So and if you take that level of complexity out and just say, you know, you get marked or assessed based on how you did this, not what you did.
Yeah.
So then negative results is okay. And then they're okay. Then they make mistakes.
Yeah.
Because you learn through making a mistake.
Yes. And then it's more about the process than it is about the product.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Karen, I think that's excellent. That's probably as much as we can do today. I think we need a second podcast with you about your project-based approach. Yes. And how you assess that.
I want to add something more. You can put it in or cut it out if you want to.
No, and then we'll decide. Then I want to add one more quick question, just for fun's sake. So people who want to know more about this can contact you.
Yeah, sure.
But I remember you talking about, in your game-based approach, the invisibility cloak. So just tell us for a moment one or two of your most fun rewards that students can get in the game, and then you can add the thing that you
so the game we play is Classcraft. It's an online game, but there's no game in there, so they can't sit for hours and playing it. So you create the game through your content, which is what I really like, so it can be very much structured to what you need. But the students, as they work through it, so every time you need to decide what they get points for. So I want them to be in class, because if they're not in class, they're not going to learn anything. I don't have slides. I don't put PowerPoints on. Mm-hmm. So they need to be there to question and
really engage.
We take roll call every time, and then we give them points for going to class, and we take off points, so you lose health points if you don't come to class, except if you reach certain levels, you have access to certain powers. And one of these is the invisibility cloak, where you can, if you play that just before class, you don't have to come to class and then I don't see you. So you don't get the points, but you don't get penalized.
Exactly.
And that is really helpful for people that sometimes really can't come to class. I have to prep for the next test, or, you know, I overslept, or I'm not feeling great, but I don't have a doctor certificate. So just, and it's not expensive. And then as they move through these powers by attending class, they access the big ones at the end, which is they can either get access to a power, which is bring extra notes into your exam, or you can
wouldn't you love that?
Get a hint. So this is the best one, is to get a hint from your lecturer during exam.
Yeah.
So they can put up their names, their hands, and they say, I have this power. And then I hand them a little hint for that question. So we had to also find all kinds of ingenious ways to overcome the fact that they can't have their cell phones in there, because the whole thing is cell phone based. It's it's an app that's on their phones.
Okay. Yeah.
And we also award them with gold points, which is not real, but I have loads of it. So, and they buy armor with that. And I feel like, you know, there's quite a bit of an attraction for some people to customize the avatar.
Yeah.
Buy pets and things, which just creates that added. But it doesn't, you cannot play it outside class.
Yes.
And then the boss battles, and that assessments are part of this whole game system. You set it up on there.
Yeah. I just love how you really blend technology with your teaching, learning, and assessment.
Oh, I love technology.
It's amazing.
It makes your life so much easier.
Exactly.
So much easier.
Embracing it.
Yeah. So the one thing I wanted to add, and I think it does fit in here a little bit, is that if you assess, you should also open yourself to be assessed.
Oh, beautiful.
So feedback from students, which is not the end of semester feedback, is really important. So creating an atmosphere where they can literally say, I didn't like that. This does not work for me, is really important. And for me, that was a really, and especially how you approach, and you get quite critical criticisms there. For me, that was quite a hard lesson to learn, because I'm very much somebody that decide on doing stuff and then I push it through. But you just, you know, stand still and really think about, how do I talk to students? Because I want them to make mistakes, but how do I react to that mistake? And sometimes your immediate reaction is not the one you should have. So I think over the last 6-7 years, I've really learned that it's very important to just be quiet, let them speak, and then think about what you say before you say, and not just react, and not tell people, oh, but you're wrong. So, but rather have a flow of this discussion. So that's an important skill that you that I've learned the hard way, which is also a good way to learn. But I think that is really important. So if you want to change the way things are, you should be open to assessments and listen to that, critically listen to that.
Yeah. Oh. Professor Karen Jacobs, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You so much for sharing your experience, and in that also sharing your wisdom with us, and sharing what you've learned and how you experience engaging with your students in really transformative, innovative ways pertaining to assessment. So thank you so much for that. And Hani, anything from you?
Yes, just thank you from our side as well. And to any listeners who want to know more about this, you can find Karen on the microbiology website, but we'll probably be able to include contact information with this as well.
Yep, and if you want to witness a boss battle, please just come on a Friday morning.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, please.
8 o'clock on a Friday morning.
We'll do. Thank you, Karen. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Well, thank you, everybody. And that's a wrap for this one. And we look forward to you joining us for the next podcast, when we talk transformative assessment.